the second of the Aseres Hadibros could loosely be described as the prohibition against idolatry. In fact, it's a lengthy presentation in the Torah in terms of the number of words and psukim even, perhaps the longest of any of the Dibros. But the reason I hedged slightly is because, in fact, there is a machlokes, what exactly is included in this second Dibra. The Rambam, most prominently, although others follow his lead, the Rambam actually believes that there are four separate prohibitions that are involved in the second of the Dibros. The first is lo yielecha elohim achirim, which means you should not believe in any other god, any other idol. Then it is lo saselecha, you cannot make an idol. Lo sishtachaveh, which means not only not to bow down, but as is understood, it means any of the four unique and focused ways of worship of Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash, bowing down, sishtachaveh, but also slaughtering, offering libations, pouring something to the idol, or burning something, a meat or incense to the idol, any of those four things which are so prominent in the Beis HaMikdash, you cannot do to any idol. And then lastly, lo sa'avdeim, you cannot worship an idol in any way that is the unique way that that idol is worshipped. In other words, lo sishtachaveh says that those four types of avodah cannot be performed towards any idol, even if that's not the way that idol is usually worshipped. You can't bow down to any idol, even if that's not the way that particular idol is worshipped. In addition to that, lo sa'avdeim tells me that any particular way an idol is worshipped, so then for that idol, you cannot act in that way. All four of these are not just ideas, but specifically in separate mitzvos that according to the Rambam, he counts in his counting of the 613 in his Sefer HaMitzvos. Among others, the Ramban prominently disagrees. And the Ramban says, no, there's only one mitzvah here, and that is a general mitzvah, an umbrella mitzvah under Lohiye of not believing in or acknowledging in any way a form of Avodah Zarah. Now, slightly humorously, I would say, it's worth noting, not humorously, but in a light manner, that the Rambam's position, at least, should at the very least remind us that when we, myself included, often would translate Aseres HaDibros as Ten Commandments, that's actually imprecise. According to the Rambam, we already see that the second Dibra includes four commandments. So there's going to be a lot more, or at least somewhat more than Ten Commandments, according to the Rambam. On the other hand, I myself would also go with the convention of Ten Commandments, only because the idea of ten statements or ten utterances just sounds ridiculous, at least not to me. But you should be aware, even if you use the term Ten Commandments, that at least according to the Rambam, it's imprecise because there's more than ten. On a more serious note, the Ramban levies a very serious question against the position of the Rambam. How could the Rambam hold that there are actually four mitzvos that are included here when the Gemara in Masechta Makos on Daf Chav Gimel, Daf Chav Dalet, in a famous teaching, teaches us that in fact, of the 613 mitzvos, the Taryag, 611 were taught to us by Moshe, and two were taught to us directly from Hashem. What are the two that were taught directly by Hashem? Anochi, the first Dibra, and Lo'iya, the second Dibra. So says the Ramban, you see explicitly in the Gemara that there are only, of the 613 mitzvos, two of them are included in these first two Dibros. Only one is in Lo'iya. According to the Rambam, the whole Gemara doesn't make any sense. The Rambam says there are four mitzvos, which would mean basically that if you add Anochi yesterday, Shir, and the four today, it really should be, according to the Rambam, 608 taught by Moshe and five taught by Hashem. But that's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara says 611 and only two taught by Hashem. That certainly seems to indicate, as the Ramban himself holds, that Lo'iya is only one mitzvah. How could the Rambam say it is four? There are numerous answers to this question, but I'll highlight just one, which is the beautiful explanation of the Meshech Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha of Dvinsk. And he explains the Rambam's position in this halachic context based on what the Rambam says in his famous philosophical work, the Mor Nevuchim. The Rambam of the Mor Nevuchim actually has an original and creative interpretation of the Gemara and explains that the nation, in fact, did not hear any commandment from Hashem. None. None of the commandments did they get from Hashem. So what does that mean in the Gemara? So there, the Rambam explains very beautifully to give us a whole insight what happened at Har Sinai. Says the Rambam, the Jewish people, 2 million strong, standing at the foot of the mountain, they heard all the words, they heard all the psukim, they heard everything from Hashem, but they couldn't understand any of it. They couldn't grasp any of the substance or the content. It was just too overwhelming. And yet, despite the fact they couldn't make out what was being said, they heard it, but they couldn't understand it. Despite that fact, because of the awesome revelation that they witnessed, they came to realize on their own that there's a God. You have to believe in a God, Anochi. And they memelo understood on their own. How can you have idols? Look, we just experienced Hashem. So they only needed Moshe to teach them another 611. In that sense, the Gemara says they heard too from Hashem. Not that Hashem taught it to them, but that they heard it from Hashem, and memela, they only needed Moshe to teach them the other things. The sense of the Meshach Chachma, the Rambam, is beautifully consistent, l'shitaso. When the way the Rambam understands the Gemara, it never said that Hashem only taught the Jewish people two mitzvos. The Gemara meant it only taught them these two dibros. Included in the two dibros are in fact not two, but altogether five mitzvos. One Anochi, yesterday's topic, and four in this topic. So that is the very beautiful explanation of the Meshech Chachma, which not only, so to speak, gets the Rambam off the hook, but also gives us an insight, at least the Rambam's understanding, of what actually happened at Har Sinai and the whole idea of Aseret HaDibros. A second point I want to mention briefly. Later on in the Psukim, later towards the end of the of this Dibra, we are told that Hashem is going to get very, very upset if you worship idols, and the Torah itself, the Dibra, describes Hashem as an El Kana, a jealous God. Why is he dafka jealous? In fact, the Ramban here notes that throughout the Tanakh, the only time we ever find God described as jealous is in the concept of Avodah Zarah, context of Avodah Zarah. There are many other Averos. Hashem gets upset about other things. But jealous is only when it comes to Avodah Zarah. And why is that? So the Ramban, and again, others have said this after the Ramban, Rabbeinu Bachai, the Barbanel, others, but it comes from the Ramban. The Ramban says, you know why? Because it's comparable to a husband and a wife. Am Yisrael and Hashem are not just Stam, a nation and its king, a relationship. It's the unique and intense and special relationship of a husband and a wife. And when the Jewish people do something wrong, no, that's like any fight that could happen in a marriage. But if we worship Avodah Zarah, Rachmana Letzlan, that's like betraying our spouse. That's like having an illicit affair. And of course, then, if a spouse has an affair, we understand on a human level, the one who was cheated on is jealous that somebody, you know, that the husband or wife found comfort and company somewhere else. That's a natural emotion in such a context. And therefore explains, that's why Hashem is jealous dafka here. I would add on my own a little ha'ara, that this therefore explains why, according to the Rambam at least, there's a separate prohibition, as we explained before, of worshiping any Avodah Zarah with the four special means of Avodah, of worship, that are usually reserved in the Beis HaMikdash. Even if the particular idol doesn't usually have things slaughtered to it or doesn't bow down to it, but those four things that are unique to the Beis HaMikdash, or especially in the Beis HaMikdash, are usher anywhere. How so? Why does that make any sense? How I bow down to an idol that usually even their own practitioners don't bow down to. Why is that prohibited? And I think now we understand it so beautifully. Because like a couple that has their unique special things, every relationship, every couple has words, a special song, a special present, a special place they like to go out together on a date, or who knows what. If you take something, it's one thing to cheat on your spouse, to have an illicit affair, but can you imagine how much worse it would be if you did that in a place or with something in the relationship that's really using something that was so special between husband and wife, and you use dafka that? Dafka the marital bed, or dafka some other thing that's unique to the intimacy of your spousal relationship, and you use that while you cheated on your spouse, that is all the more troubling. And that, I think, is the explanation of that third understanding, Isser, according to the Rambam. Last but not least, I want to address, I think, if you will, the elephant in the room, which is, how do we relate to this entire prohibition? After all, none of us has any Yetzer Hara, any Taiva. We can't even understand why anyone would worship idols. The whole thing sounds so bizarre to us. Or read Psukim and Chumash, Gemaras. The whole thing makes sense. We have plenty of desires. We have plenty of inclinations that aren't good. We have to overcome. But Avodah Zarah, how is this Lo Yelecha, however many mitzvos it is, how does it relate to any of us? And the Gemara itself tells us in Masechet Sanhedrin that the Chachamim successfully petitioned to remove the Yetzer Hara, and they were successful. They were successful, the Gemara says it. There is no more Yetzer Hara, we don't feel it. So perhaps an answer can emerge from the explanation that different Mefarshim give to what does it mean, Lo Yelcha Elohim Achirim? What are these Elohim? So, and why is it El Achirim? How do you translate that? Other gods. So Rashi already addresses this. Rashi doesn't like that translation. Rabbeinu Bachai, others have different explanations. But in the short time that we have left, I just want to briefly mention Reb Tzadok HaKohen. Reb Tzadok HaKohen in Tzidkas HaTzadik, Os Reish Lamed Beis, explains that Elohim Perush, Koach V'Yecholet B'chol Makom. Elohim Achirim, or Elohim here, doesn't mean gods. It means forces. Any force in the world in which you view it as acher, you view it as not being connected to God, lo ye Elohim acherim, you're in a violation. You're giving credence to the idea that there could be some other source to power, to forces, to talents in the world, when really all forces and all powers in the world come from Hashem. And therefore, Reb Tzadok HaKohen continues, and he says, any koach that you have with your body, whether it's your koach ha-ri'iyah, shmia, the way you see, the way you hear, any of your talents, your actions, anything you do, in all of them, says Reb Tzadok, yakir shashem yisbarach hu hanosein lo koach zeh. You have to recognize that all of your talents, all of your successes, they come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you don't recognize that, you see other forces in the world or other forces even within yourself, and you think that it comes from you or it comes from some other source or someone else deserves credit, you don't realize the ultimate credit goes back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That, on a deeper level, says Reb Tzadok HaKohen, that is a violation of lo yeh Elohim acherim. Don't think that there's any Elohim, any force, any koach that's acher, that's separate from Hashem. Ultimately, it all comes from Hashem. And therefore, even if the technical bow down to an idol kind of avodah zarah is hard for us to relate to, but this other form of self-worship, of Elohim Acherim, of seeing talents and accomplishments and successes, and etc. in life, and not seeing the hand of God in them, seeing other forces in the universe, and giving purely natural explanations without realizing that it's God who's the author of all of these natural explanations, that is, on some deeper level, a form of avodah zarah, and one which, unfortunately, I think we can be honest, we all struggle with, and certainly our generation as much, if not more, than previous generations struggles with this. And with this understanding, this second dibur of Eliyah is unfortunately painfully relevant as much now as ever before.